I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances, and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's just some of why my fat body rocks.
Herzlich willkommen zum Larger Living Podcast, dein Podcast zum original intuitiven Essen nach Rash und Triboli, Health at Every Size, Body Image, Feminismus und einer Prise Ethnologie. Ich bin Dot und ich bin deine Wegweiserin raus aus dem Diätendschungel hin zu mehr Selbstakzeptanz, mehr Selbstvertrauen, gesunder Selbstfürsorge und Frieden mit dem Essen und deinem Körper. Lehn dich zurück, mach's dir gemütlich, schnapp dir ein Heißgetränk deiner Wahl. Wir legen los. This is a PSA for my English-speaking listeners. I will not be as active and responsive on social media as I usually am in June because I'm taking the time off to work intensely on my first ever online course. The course is going to be in German. It's going to be called Diät Talk Bremse, which roughly translates to Diet Talk Break. And if you're interested in that, if you're bilingual, or if you want me to do the very same course in English, just pop me an email at info@largerliving.de. And yeah, you get all the infos about it that I can share at this very moment. Don't worry, the podcast will still go on. And I am still continuing to coach people. I'm not taking the 4 weeks completely for myself. But if you are missing me and you want to maybe get coached by me, you can absolutely book your discovery call through my online calendar at calendly.com/largerliving. I'll link it in the show notes. And yeah, that's basically all. So I'm not dead. I am working. I'm still there. And I will answer your messages, just not as swiftly as you're used to. Welcome to the Larger Living Podcast, Tiana Dodson. I'm so excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. And actually, I know you personally, and this is one of the special connections that I have with some of my podcast guests. I met you, correct me if I'm wrong, 3 or 4 years ago. I'm not so sure. I think it was in 2017, right? In Berlin.
Oh my God, it's an age. Yes, it's been forever.
And you were there for fat activism conference get together. You also lived not far away from Berlin. You used to live in Greifswald. That's why you still speak a little bit of German.
That's right.
And we met for karaoke night, for fat karaoke. And this is how we actually met, singing. You have a lovely singing voice. I still remember it.
Thank you.
And we got together, we talked about the fat life and what it entails and all of it, and
that's right.
Yeah, I keep telling that to you. I think that you have this wonderful talent of telling a hurtful story or telling a dark story, but telling it from such a compassionate place. And you, like, really, you roped me in with that, because, you know, fat phobia is not a nice and easy topic to talk about. You know, fat hate is not a nice and easy topic to talk about. No. Trauma is not a nice and easy topic to talk about. But I think that you really have the talent to talk about all of this, but always end on this by comparison higher note of, no, look, it's all about compassion, it's all about, you know, community, it's all about that. And yeah, that's really how you got me. This is really how I stayed with you and your content and with you personally, because yeah, I mean, I know you personally, so I can really attest that you are a very, very warm person, which mm-hmm. I absolutely love. And yeah, so I'm absolutely honored to have you on my podcast today.
Oh, thanks for having me. And thank you for this lovely, warm introduction. that's really, really great to hear that like, this is your perception of me and my work. And that's very affirming. Like, thank you so much.
No, this really is that. I think you have really a talent for that. It's truly. So, yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
So let's talk about, if you want to, how you got to do this work. Because I know you having this work, but what got you in there?
Mm-hmm. All right, so here we go. The long story, trying to make it short. Yeah. I'm a lifetime dieter. I've been fat since, gosh, as long as I've known. It was about the age of 8 when I was really made very, very acutely aware that my body was too big and that was a bad thing. And so I was fortunate enough to where there was no one in my family who was like actively championing like putting me on a diet or trying to change my body. But so I learned my dieting from my mom. And I just basically learned by watching her diet. She never really criticized me. I don't have any memories of active criticism of my size, but I do know, like, my stepfather said to me once, "No man is ever going to want a fat woman." And that was so confusing for me. It was so confusing for me at the time, partially because, you know, my stepfather says this to me. He's married to my mom at the time. I look at my mom and I'm like, but she's a fat woman and you're a man and you're with her. So I don't understand this. This is like, just doesn't make sense to me. But that has stayed with me. I mean, I turned 41 this year and like, you know, that's, oh God, that's 33 years ago that something like this, that this happened. And I can still recall the whole experience, you know, like where we were located and what we were doing, you know, and just the confusion that I had, you know? So I was like, okay, well, men don't want me or men won't want me because I'm big. So that's a problem. And I need to change that. So essentially, this kind of just set me off on this journey where whatever my mom was doing to diet, I was doing it too. You know, she was chewing this dieting gum. And so, like, I would sneak into the bottle and, like, chew the gum. You know, it's like it's appetite suppressant or whatever. You know, we were eating low-fat, zero-fat cookies in the house, if there were cookies at all. If she was doing different kinds of exercises, like I would do them too, not with her, of course, because I was sneak dieting, I guess you could say, you know, I was doing it on my own time. Like we weren't doing it together. I was like, just like, okay, that's what my mom is doing. So I'll do it too. And basically like this continued on until my adult life when I had, you know, control over who was buying the groceries and how things were being cooked. And it really went into hyperdrive like after I graduated college. And that was because for the first time in my life, like I actually had the means to do something about it. And of course, like I had done what most people had done in college, which is like, you're super busy. You don't really have money. You don't really have access. And so you tend to gain weight. So I was like, yeah, I need to get my health in order, because this was the time when dieting wasn't really being talked about so much as dieting. It was now about health. like very out front about health. And so, okay, I'm concerned about my health. I'm going to be healthier. So I started going to Weight Watchers.
Ah, you too. I went there for 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I do have to say, like, I was a weak Weight Watcher. I didn't last very long. I did go two different times. Like, you know, I went for a while. I stopped going. I canceled. And then I was like, oh God, this is terrible. I need to go back. So I went back a second time. And it was not great. It was just not great, you know? But I mean, if you've done Weight Watchers and failed it, quote unquote failed it, you understand what I'm saying. So, I mean, I did learn a few things. Like I learned how to eat whole grains and I learned that vegetables were important, you know, and like there were some like really nice health promoting messages in between all the diet shit, you know.
Weight Watchers teaches you how to cook. Like really?
Yeah. Exactly.
It teaches you how to cook. It teaches you how to throw things together.
Yeah, it was wonderful in that way.
For sure. But, yeah. You know, it's still a diet.
In between the diet
shit. It teaches.
Exactly.
In between the, yeah, absolutely. And the same with when you do it for a longer period of time, you get into this. I didn't participate in it because I don't know why. Maybe my sanity kicked in finally. Hopefully. Of this whole counting physical activity against points, and that is like really, really the bad shit about Weight Watchers. Like, I know for sure that the apps that they have put out recently, the adult and the kids version, both of them feature telling you how much calories you burn in food. So go for a jog for X minute and then you gain X amount of food. And I think that really is enabling eating disorders or disordered eating for sure. And
absolutely.
I thankfully never took part in this because I could see the dangerous potential of it. Also, my coach made it optional for everyone, which I think was great, but that practice alone of Weight Watchers is not accounting for quote unquote healthy eating at all.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the worst part is, I mean, good for you that you got to dodge that bullet, but I totally did not, because my struggle with Weight Watchers was really like, I just enjoy food.
Fuck yes. Which,
why do you not enjoy food? Yeah, I mean, like, you should enjoy food. Food is so sensual and pleasurable. We should be enjoying our food. And so I basically was using the offset of the exercise in order to continue to eat food. So I was not a very successful Weight Watcher for lots of reasons, but I mean mostly because this shit just doesn't work. It's not sustainable. It's not good for you long term. And so yeah, that was it. And so I got a job in Germany. I was there for a year. I had a contract, and while I was there, I was riding a bike. This was really like my last real attempt at dieting. And basically, I was bicycling everywhere because Germany is friendly to such a thing. And so what I would do, my routine was, I would get up in the morning, I would get ready for work. I would bicycle to work. Once I would get to work, we had a little cafeteria. I would eat a little bit of breakfast. I would drink nothing but water until lunchtime. I would generally have a relatively hearty lunch because Germany is great for that. Then I would drink nothing but water and eat almost nothing for the rest of the day. I would then bicycle to the gym most days of the week, mostly also because I had nothing else to do. I would climb 6 flights of stairs to get to the gym. I would do 30 minutes of warm up on a treadmill. I would do 40 minutes on an elliptical machine or until I reached a certain calorie count.
Oh my God.
Then I would do the full circuit of weight bearing exercises on the machines. And then I would take a shower, bicycle home. Now it's like 9 o'clock in the evening, sometimes near 10 o'clock, depending on how long it took me. And I would generally go to bed pretty much immediately to avoid eating. There is absolutely nothing healthy about this routine.
Yes.
I mean, it's great that I'm doing things like bicycling and climbing stairs and such. Like, great. But, like, I mean, I'm pretty sure that if I had gone and gotten a diagnosis, I was in, like, active eating disorder. You know, like, this was really nasty what I was doing. But, like, I felt like I was healthy and I was losing weight. So I was really excited about what I was doing. I met a guy while I was there. And when my contract was over and I went back to the States, it was like, okay, you know, we're dating long distance. He likes to do things like sauna because sauna is very German, even though he's not German, but he really took to the German culture of sauna. And so like, I was looking for a sauna for him when he was coming to visit. And while I was on the website of this place that I found, they were hosting a detox webinar, or not a webinar, I'm sorry. We used to do in-person things back then.
Yeah. Hard to imagine now. Oh, I give God. You that, but yeah,
know,
there was a time where people actually shook hands without disinfecting them first. Yes. Yes. Yes.
We used to sit in a room together, touching each other.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so
hugging.
I went to the seminar. I know. Yeah. Oh my God. So like I went to the seminar for detox because I was like, yeah, I'm a healthy person. Maybe I need detox. That sounds like something I need. And it was this, this talk given by this health coach and she offered a free health history. And so I was like, that sounds great. Let's go ahead and do this. And while I was in the health history with her, she made a connection between like the traumas that I was experiencing in my childhood and my weight gain, something that I had never put together. And I was like, oh my God, you know things, you're going to be able to solve me. So absolutely, where do I sign? Where do I, you know, how do we get this started? And so I started seeing this health coach and basically it was fine. You know, she was a raw vegan and she told me kind of at the outset, like, look, my goal is to get you to be a raw vegan or at least as close as we can get. And I was like, hell, if it's going to make me look like you, I'm in, you know? But I mean, I was not raw vegan at the end of our time together. I hadn't really lost any weight, but she did help me learn how to eat vegetables, have a better relationship with vegetables. And I really liked what she was doing because I'm somebody who's really liked helping people. I've always gravitated toward helping people. And we could say this is, you know, this is a trauma response. And it is. But basically, it's something I've always really enjoyed doing. It's always been something that's given me a lot of pleasure is to help other people. And like, working with this health coach also awoke this interest in nutrition that I had never had before. So I was like, okay, she looks so happy. She's working from home. She's got a great butt. She's cooking these amazing, preparing these amazing foods. I want this lifestyle, you know? Yeah, I mean, I want this lifestyle. I want to be a health coach. And so I did. When I left my job in order to move back to Germany to be with my husband, it gave me an opportunity to try something new. And so I went to health coaching school. And that was an interesting experience because here I am, this fat person, visibly fat, visibly fat person in health coaching school. Everything was virtual, so I was able to hide out a little bit in the beginning. And we were promised a transformation. Like, going through this program was going to give us a transformation. And of course, at the time, I was like, that means that I will come out the other side thin. This is not the transformation that happened.
Like the show so far? Why not hop on over to patreon.com and become one of my regular supporters? That way, you get all the podcast episodes without the ads, but most importantly, you do something else with it. Your contribution goes into a money pool, and from that money pool, I am able to offer SOS community-based coaching in my lunch hour from Wednesday to Friday. And you become one of the supporters for another person who might struggle with food and is in dire need of health at every size and intuitive eating coaching. Thank you so much and enjoy the show.
However, the transformation that did happen was that I was introduced to the idea of bioindividuality. So the founder of the school, Joshua Rosenthal, has this thing called bioindividuality that he teaches about, which is basically that one man's food is another man's poison. And I really liked this idea. Yeah, I really liked this idea. Because it made sense to me. Because while we were in health coaching school, we got all of these different presentations about all these different ways of eating. You know, like we had one person come in and tell us all about how dairy was the healthiest thing you could be eating. Then we had somebody else coming in who said dairy was terrible for you and you should never be eating it. We had somebody coming in and saying like gluten is something that's going to kill you. And then we had somebody else who was saying like, no, you're just eating it wrong. That's why you don't, you know, that's why it's not working. And so it's just like, you know, there were so many different types of diets that that the people who were espousing these diets were all saying, this is the thing that made me healthy. This diet is what keeps me in optimal health. And I'm like, if we can have this many diets and this many people claiming that these different diets work, that's bioindividuality. That makes complete and total sense. Yeah. Every person is different. Every person is going to have a different way of eating that serves their needs. That got me thinking. Because I was like, okay, I've got this blood work result that basically on paper says that I am a healthy person. Yet the doctor says I'm going to die early and have all these problems because my body is large. But I'm active. I wasn't losing any weight, but I was active. I was, you know, mostly vegan at the time. So it's like, I'm eating, you know, quote unquote, well, I'm eating a lot of nutritious foods, mostly plant-based, whole. I'm not losing any weight. Huh. Is it a possibility that I could be fat and also be healthy? So I went to the internet looking for the answer because I have a background in mechanical engineering, so I have a sort of analytical way of thinking and looking at things. And I like to have proof and do research. So I did these things. I went to the internet looking for the research, and I tumbled upon Health at Every Size. And that was the freaking turning point for me. So this is how I went from like a health coach who was trained to teach people how to drink more water and eat more greens and, you know, move their bodies more so they can lose weight, to somebody who's going, what if actually we could do all those things and not worry about the weight stuff?
Yeah.
And that's just kind of where it started for me. I followed a bunch of bloggers. I just kind of tumbled down the slippery slope of activism and radical fat positivity. Here I am today.
Ta-da! Thank you for sharing your journey. Yeah, Similar. Without the mechanical engineering part for me, I gotta add that. It was more. I took the long route via binge eating disorder, and at one point I just figured I don't want to be thin anymore. I don't want to be quote unquote healthy anymore. I just want that to stop. I just want to eat normally, quote unquote, normally. And then I stumbled across Isabel Fox and Duke, who is like the one of the biggest specialists on binge eating disorder that I've ever come across, and who like fatefully was my first podcast guest. Still thank her for that. She's amazing. Then she introduced me to the fat positive, fat acceptance sphere by introducing her friend Virgie Tova to me. And I was like blown away, because Virgie asked the revolutionary question, what if it were okay to be fat? And I was like, no. That was my first reaction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what? No. No, but the fat.
That's
like,
right.
What?
That's right.
And it really stayed with me. It marinated inside my head. And at one point, just like, yeah, but I actually don't have any arguments. I don't have any arguments against that. I can't really say, yeah. And And again, like, what if it were okay to be fat?
That's right.
And this is how I got into the fatosphere. This was my entry card. So I'm going to stay eternally grateful to both Isabel and Virgie for introducing me to that. And then later, through Isabel first, I figured out Health at Every Size and Intuitive Eating, because she talks about it a lot. And and Virgie radicalized me. Yeah, this was my journey. Yeah. Isn't it amazing? I always wanna tell people, like, no, hold on. I think I have to rephrase that otherwise. We both coach people. We're both coaches.
Yeah.
So when people come to us and they're on the fence of learning about, you know, Health at Every Size and intuitive eating, about letting go of all the rules around food at all, and just listening to their inner cues and figuring out what is good for them. I feel that there is this sort of weird threshold that they have to kind of walk by at first, where they have to figure out, I don't want to be on yet another diet, because yet another diet is not the answer to my problems, right? So that is mostly a given for most people who come to see me, and I'm sure for most of the people who come to see you. Mm-hmm. But after a certain amount of time, there is this kind of trial test of just like, oh, I'm relinquishing control and now I'm starting to gain weight. Oh, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And then kind of control is something that they desperately hold on to even more. Or let's put it that way. In my interview with Elise Resch, I asked her a supervision question that she answered publicly. And I think it's weird. So when people... I have two hands. I hold two hands in front of me. One has a very tight coiled fist and the other one is loose. So when they open up the restriction at one point of their life around food and, you know, around their bodies, when they slowly release the tension, release the restriction, for a lot of my clients, it is that in another part of their life, they add the restriction in with under another guise, under another mask. All of a sudden, they become workaholics when they weren't before. all of a sudden they have to do everything 110%. And not, and then I even had one client who said, oh, I'm not just controlling my work, I'm actually controlling the work of my colleagues also, and I never did anything like that before. I asked Elise about it, and Elise said, oh, well, that is very easy to answer. It is trauma. They are experiencing some trauma in their life that they feel that they need to exert some control over. It used to be with food. Thanks to your work, they have relinquished that control around food, and they are now, you know, opening up. But in order to cope with past trauma, they are trying to control another aspect of their life. So from colleague to colleague, what do you do? What do you do when someone shows this? How do you talk about them, with them about it?
This is a deep question.
I know.
So I have a 4-step framework for body liberation that I developed unknowingly, while working with clients. And what I find is that, so the first step is education. You have to understand the systems that are at work that are keeping you in this way of thinking and way of performing and way of being. And step two is reframing. So step two, reframing is all about taking these messages that you've been given, because none of these are messages you gave yourself, but taking all these messages you've been given and interrogating them to know, are they true? Do they serve me, or do they harm me? And then finding ways to stop the ones that are most harmful, that cannot be reworked into something that can be helpful, to rework the ones that were once harmful, that can be reworked into something helpful, and then, you know, moving forward with that. Step three is self-care and resilience building, because you've done this great inner work, yet you have to go out into the world that hasn't really changed. So you need to be able to both take care of yourself, to repair the wounding that you're going to experience, but also build a community around yourself to help give you support when, you know, you need it, because we are communal beings. We are social beings. We need community. None of this work can be done alone. And then step four is advocacy, where basically you take all this work that you've done and you start making the ripples happen around you. So you are able to show up for yourself in different ways so that you can get your needs met. And the best part about the advocacy is the fact that you're not just helping yourself, you're helping those who come behind you and those around you. So this is my 4-step framework. Essentially, what I tend to do when I am working with people is I like to help explain the systems at work, because capitalism, neoliberalism, all of these other oppressive systems, they have us believing that it's our fault. Everything's our fault. If you're sick, it's your fault. You know, if you're fat, it's your fault. And it is all under your control. And it is also your responsibility to fix. And these are harmful messages that are also untrue. They are untrue. There are so few things about our bodies that we actually have real control over. There are very few things about our health, things that can help us have better health outcomes, that are actually under our control. The great majority have of the things that affect our health, like have real effect on our health, are things that we cannot change, like our race and like our early childhood educational opportunities. I mean, you're no longer a child. You can't change that, you know? And so basically I like to educate people and try to help people understand that this is not your fault. The fact that you feel negatively about yourself, the fact that you have this trauma, the fact that you are responding to your trauma in these ways, this is not your fault. Because I think that that helps quite a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
To release that tension, to release that. It's not your responsibility that this happened to you. It is not your, you know, it's not your work to like change that part, you know, because you can't change that. However, that doesn't mean that you are powerless, because all of us have power and capability, whether we know it or not, to make changes. And so that's why with my framework, the first step is gather information. And then the second step is do something with it. Because we are very, very much divorced from ourselves. We are taught culturally in the global North, in the West, in the first world, however you want to call it, to live in our heads.
Yes.
The whole idea, like, you know, above the neck and above is where your real life is. Mm-hmm. This is where, you know, the things of value are. The rest of it is just meat sack that carries it around. And like the thing, like the experiences of the body, sensuality, sexuality, these things, they're dirty, they're bad, they're base, they're low. And this is a very effective messaging, because it keeps you disconnected from the wisdom that is within, actually in the body. Like the indigeneity of each of us is held within our bodies, not our minds. And so by staying in our heads, we are disconnected from nature. We are disconnected from each other. We are disconnected from all the things that can really give depth and meaning to our lives. And so when you're taking the trauma you've experienced in one place and you're just displacing it to another, it's because you're not in touch with yourself. So I advocate very much in my work, not for body love, because I've come to understand that this is sort of violent and abusive language, because it's asking people to aspire to something that is out of reach for many of us. Because if we only say body love, you have to come and love your body, you gotta love it, we are erasing people who suffer body dysmorphia. We are erasing people who have body-based traumas. We're erasing chronically ill or disabled or other types of people who maybe will never get to a place where they can actually love the body that they're in. So I say instead, let's get to a place where you are in partnership with your body.
That's great.
Where you can feel neutrally about yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, because in the end, right, like, I just don't want you to hate yourself.
Yeah.
Like, let's get out of that hate place. Let's get out of that shame place. And let's get to a place where you can at least listen and hear the messages that your body's giving you and respond in kind. This is just a relationship. It's just respect. It's just partnership. That's all that is. You don't have to be in love with somebody that you have a relationship with, unless you're in a romantic relationship or something like that. But like, think of like a business partner, you know, or somebody you're doing a project with, you know, your body.
Yeah, or friend.
Yeah, exactly. Your body is your life partner. It has been with you since the beginning, and it will be with you until the end. It's the best partner you're going to have. It's the only one that's going to stay the whole time. Yeah. So like, just like, let's be okay with each other. Can we just be okay with each other? Is that cool?
Yeah. Oh, God, that resonates so much on so many different levels. I think my 15-year-old self wants to thank you for this, because I suffered from body dysmorphic disorder. I was there. I really was there. And I was never, ever diagnosed, because I diagnosed myself. Because it was, people told me, oh, the young girls these days, they all don't like their body. Oh, she will grow into it. She will grow into it. Oh, she will grow out of it, and she will grow into it. Oh, it's going to be fine in a few years. Well, guess what? It wasn't fine. Because if you look in the mirror and you're disgusted by what you see, like truly, truly disgusted to a very, very deep level, when you think of yourself as the meat sack carrying around you, I think it was so brilliantly put, because I used to talk to myself like that. Even so much so that I consumed a lot of sci-fi literature, you know, now with series like Altered Carbon and other sci-fi literature, with one of my favorite pen and paper role-playing systems. I'm a nerd. I'm that nerdy. That is called Eclipse Phase. That is older than Altered Carbon, where they had the idea of you have two sheets there when you play that system. You have the sheets of the ego, which is, you know, what's in your head, and the sheet of the morph, like which body you are in. And you're technically able to switch morphs whenever you want. You're even technically able to fork yourself, like make a copy of your ego to go somewhere else and do another task for you, and then later merge. I mean, I consumed that shit like crazy, because this was what I wanted. Like, I wanted to Oh, I can send it all to you. It's you can even find it as PDFs, because Eclipse Phase is Creative Commons. You can download it all for free. Yeah, no shit.
I also need a fork.
Oh, I need some forks too. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I consumed all of that, and I was just like, I want this, I want this, I want this. And then, you know, when I had some really bad times, I was just like, I want to leave this meat sack. If I could, I really want to leave. And so yeah, this is not being not super cool with your body as a 15-year-old. That is more than that. And so yeah, that resonated very, very deeply. And
That's right.
I always use the metaphor of peace and war in a way, because when you're at war with your body, when you really are, you know, fighting against it all the time, and when your goal is peace, you have to have the stepping stone in between of body truce. Because, you know, same when you have two fighting parties that clash against each other. You don't resolve the conflict from one day to the next. That's not how it works. And, you know, at first it needs to come to a halt on both sides. And then you're going to have a talk, and then you're going to gonna talk about, you know, what you need to do in order to establish peace. Maybe you have to do some haggling and all of that, but the first step is to come to a standstill, come to a hold, pause, and then think, okay, what are you gonna do? So this is exactly what I talk about, and I it helped me in my life to calm down the evil voices, or however you like to call it, or the influence that really got me to a point where I separated mind and body completely, and where I had like at my really disturbing days. I think I should really record an episode about body dysmorphic disorder, and I will soon for sure. That I had thoughts like, oh, my wonderful spirit, my wonderful intellect cannot possibly live in such a disgusting hose.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself is just a testament to how much influence marketing, fashion, diet culture in and of itself, because diet culture is like this. It's not just one thing. It's not just an advertisement for I don't know, flat tummy tea. That's not all it is. It is a culture for a reason. It's like a, I don't know. I always talk about it as being, I'm a nerd. I love H.P. Lovecraft. I love Cthulhu. So I always use a little bit of nerdy quotes in that. It really is like this big ass octopus with like an infinite amount of arms that span around and have their little octopus suckers everywhere. And is really almost everywhere, and you cannot really escape it because that is the culture that we all live in. But right. You can show it the big ass middle finger and say, nope, I'm not playing around in that anymore. I'm getting out of it. I choose to opt out willingly, and I choose to listen to something else for a change. I choose to listen to like what I want and need without judgment.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I always say that how you get started on the journey toward body liberation is it takes two things. The first thing is it takes conscious choice. You can't just like fall into it. Because just like a mud puddle that you fall into, you have to choose to stay in that mud, or you choose to get up and keep going. So you have to make a conscious choice. You have to say, yes, I want to change. I want to opt out. I don't want to do this anymore. But then that second part is also important, because the first part is a commitment. And it's a promise and a creed that you have with yourself. But the second part is the thing that actually makes it come to life, which is action. You've got to now do something. So you can't say, I opt out, and just fold your hands and sit quietly. That doesn't work. because there's so much work that's required. Because everything in your body, everything in your life affects your body image, and your body image affects everything in your life. And so there is so much work to do. There's so much digging and unpacking and unlearning and relearning that has to happen. And the reason why is because diet culture and the worship of thinness touches everything. Yeah. It touches everything because it's not just one system. It is the system that buoyed white supremacy culture.
Yeah.
You know, white supremacy culture was justified and was bought into by so many people. The act of enslavement of darker skinned people, because being, you know, they were sensual and of the body and gluttonous and gross, and you don't want to be that. Look at how fat and round they are. You don't want to be fat and round. You want to be intellectually better than and physically better than, and so that means that you have to be opposite of them. You have to be white and you have to be thin. And this system has, you know, this justification of white supremacy culture and enslavement of darker skinned peoples is the same system that was used to, you know, push people who are feminine of center down, because like, okay, you know, you're white and you're thin, which makes you better than these darker skinned savages, but you don't want to be like them because that would make you unworthy because you are a person who has a vagina. And so the same system, you know, like you is all, they're all so intertwined. It's so incestuous. There is no such thing as fighting patriarchy without also fighting racism. Yeah. You can't fight colonialism without talking about, you know, this cult of thinness. And like, all of these things are intertwined and all of them inform each other. And basically, if you are actively choosing to opt out of diet culture, you are also actively choosing to do work around your other internalized oppressions or participation tacitly or otherwise in these systems of oppression. It is necessary.
Yep. Yep. And it will, it's just a logical response, honestly. It's just like,
absolutely,
you cannot have, you cannot not opt out of it without opting out of the other. So mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, when we talk about neoliberalism, which is one of my favorite hate topics to talk about, by the way, we have to talk about the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. Because who profits from neoliberalism? The motherfucking patriarchy.
Absolutely.
Patriarchy. Blah, blah, blah. Sorry. The motherfucking patriarchy. There you go. And when you talk about feminism, you have to talk about the patriarchy. You also have to talk about, you know, all of the intersections.
Exactly.
Because when I, a white person, stand somewhere and say, oh, I'm a feminist, that is something completely different than when you do it.
Absolutely. But also, I mean, regardless of what you look like when you're practicing your feminism, feminist thought all came from the work and the lived experience of queer Black women. So, like,
yep.
You know, it's like you can be a feminist, but you can't, I mean, you can't be a true feminist. You can't really be practicing the actuality of feminism if you are not also working to be anti-racist and working toward liberation for all types of bodies.
Yep.
Because in the end, like, systems of oppression are all bodily oppressions. Like, you know, diet culture, weight stigma, these are against a certain type of body, a fat body. Racism and anti-Blackness, these are things against bodies that have certain types of skin color or certain skin colors.
Yep.
Patriarchy against a certain type of body, the female body, perceived or made that way or born that way. And, you know, on and on and on and on, all of the systems of oppression are bodily oppressions. And that's why I work toward body liberation, because my work is really like, I'm trying to center the most marginalized of us all, you know, because the more, if we can make space for the most marginalized people, for the disabled, for the chronically ill, for the transgendered, for the people with dark skin, for people who I have not added to this list, but are also included, like, this makes space for all of us. And it's not a zero-sum game. Nobody loses anything, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. Somebody's losing something, like, because we're kind of tearing down the hierarchy. But in the end, we all win so much more than we lose.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Totally. It's totally worth it. And it's just, yeah. I mean, to you and me, it really is a no-brainer. I don't have to explain it between you and me. I try to explain it to some of my clients. I think that you do the same. But yeah, it's,
yeah.
I think that when you're deep, deep down the anti-diet rabbit hole, or the health at every size rabbit hole, that then shows you the entanglement and intertwineness of all the oppressive system that we both talked about. You see it clear as day, but yeah. I'm very sure that, you know, and person who just gave up diet culture, who just found out that, okay, this obviously isn't working for me. I've been doing that for X amount of years or months or whatever. And I'm just realizing, this is not how it goes, but what now? How am I supposed to live my life now? Yeah. How am I supposed to eat? How am I supposed to move my body? How am I supposed what am I supposed to do now? Because all the rules and regulations have been lifted. All of the framework has gone. And then you're left alone. And then you don't know what to do. And then you're just like, what? And you, Dot, or Tiana, doesn't matter because we both say the same. We tell you there are no rules, bitch. There never were rules to begin with. The rules are a made up bullshit thing that belongs to the system. And no, there are no rules. There are just your own rules that you get to make yourself.
Yeah.
And then sometimes,
I mean, there's nothing universal. There's nothing universal. Yeah,
exactly. 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 That's an excellent point. There's nothing universal.
Well, okay, that's not true. We are all born. We all need to eat food. We all need to drink water.
We all shit.
We all need to breathe air. And we all will die at some point. These are the... Yeah, there's lots of shit along the way. Like, we all have these things. These are universal. But basically, how you get to these things and how you do the things, like, is completely and totally individual. It depends on who you are, how the identities that you hold, your situation, and it changes from moment to moment because, like I said earlier, I'm 41 this year, and basically, like, the things that are true for me right now are very different than they were when I was 31 or 21 or 11, even for that matter, and will also again be different when I am 51 and 61 and so on and so forth if I make it that far. Or if the world doesn't explode before then, who knows? But in the end, like, the systems of oppression, capitalism, all of this is telling us there is one right way. There is one path, and we should all be following it. And this is the thing that keeps us in these dysmorphic, dissonant places, because it's not for us. These systems are not made to support us. They are made to exploit us.
Yep. Couldn't have said it better. Thank you. That's exactly it. I try to ask one question that I want to ask all of my podcast guests. And I love that question because it gives room to opportunity. So what is a topic or a question that you get rarely or never asked, but that you are passionate about answering?
Oh, dear. This is a great question.
Thank you. Take your time.
That's very amusing that absolutely nothing is coming to mind. Absolutely nothing is coming. Absolutely nothing is coming to mind, which is actually not true. There are a lot of things that are rushing to my mind, but like, it's like, oh yeah, you know, you were asked this and you were asked that and you were asked this other thing. I don't know how to answer this question. I do not know how.
maybe its little sister question is, what is a topic that you think should be talked about more?
Oh dear. So many of them, so many topics. There are so many topics that need to be discussed more. And I guess, okay. Yeah, this is what I will say. When you start on this journey, toward body liberation. I call it body liberation because basically, you know, you're healing your relationship with your body. You're healing your relationship with food. You're healing your relationship to performances of, you know, your gender identity or your sexuality or any other identity that you may hold. Like, all of these things can be part of the work and are part of the work if you're willing to go there. And I did say that you start this journey with conscious choice and action by coupling those two things together. But if you're listening to this and you're going, okay, I just like struggle to eat salads and I, you know, I just don't want this to be a struggle anymore. How the hell does that feed into neoliberalism and capitalism and racism and things? And this is a great question because, yeah, like, we got real deep and like real big and expansive in this conversation. But the fact is that, like, for me, what happened was I didn't realize from the outset that dieting was based in white supremacy culture and, you know, had racism kind of at its foundation. I didn't realize that at first. That took a long time to get there. The way I got there really had a lot to do with the fact that by going on this journey and unpacking the way I felt about my fatness helped me learn self-compassion. This is not to say that every day I wake up and I'm like, ugh, this body is great and I have no problems with food and so on and so forth, because none of that is true. I still have bad body days. I still struggle with food. I still struggle with eating. I still struggle with all of the things because I still live in the culture that we all are living in. That is obsessed with thinness and dominance and control. But by learning how to be compassionate with myself and accepting myself as a complex human being who fails, who makes on average 5 mistakes an hour, it's a fact. Human beings make on average 5 mistakes per hour. When I learned to hold that for myself, that yeah, I'm going to fuck up, I'm going to say something wrong, I'm going to have a bladder slip because I have a kid, you know, like, I'm going to have these kinds of problems. Sometimes my armpits will smell, you know, like, I do poop, you know, when I was able to hold these things for myself.
Shocker.
All of the, I know, right? Shocking. But all these delicious complexities that I have because I am a person, I am a human being, I have a body, and bodies are gross and complex and fascinating all at the same time. It was easier for me to have compassion for others. Others that were both like me and unlike me. I was able to look at someone who, you know, was transgender. Like, this was something that was completely new to me as a concept, like, just a couple years ago, you know, because I had not knowingly known anyone transgender in my lifetime. I grew up in Colorado Springs, Colorado. It's pretty conservative there. So I had a relatively conservative upbringing. And so, like, you know, transgender people were new to me. I was like, I didn't know that was a thing. But I was able to just believe who they were, believe them that that's who they were and that's what it was, and do the research and learn and lean into it, because by having compassion for myself, I could extend that compassion outward. So I was able to, like, be like, yeah, you're neither a boy nor a girl. There's a whole spectrum out here of different kinds of genders. You have pronouns that I've never heard of that you made up for yourself. Cool. Do you, you know? And, it was just so easy for me to do. I mean, it didn't mean I didn't have questions. I had questions. I had lots of questions. I still have lots of questions, and I don't know what I don't know. There will be so many more questions. But every time nowadays that I come up with something new or come against something new that I don't know anything about, it is so much easier for me to accept it as fact, because I can have compassion for people because I have compassion for myself. Because even though you might be the kind of person who believes that, you know, my existence as a fat, biracial, Black and Chamorro, queer person, woman of color, goes against your values or beliefs or something, like, I can still have compassion for you because you just don't know what you don't know. You also don't understand what you're missing out on. But I have compassion for you, and that's fine. You're allowed to believe what you're allowed to believe. You're allowed to believe what you believe, like, but that doesn't mean that you can use those beliefs to push me down or change or try to tell me I am not who I am. So in the end, I mean, self-compassion, having self-compassion has changed everything about how I look at the world. It's been amazing.
Fuck yeah. I can. Yeah. Same over here. And this white pansexual turquoise hair colored femme, who is also polyamorous, extends her compassion in her arms to you and thanks you so much for being here, for sharing all of that beautiful, juicy, amazing wisdom. And I mean, like I said, you have that absolute talent that you just demonstrated in the past hour, that it's just so amazing. And yeah, thank you so much, Tiana, for everything. So self-compassion for sure is the key. It really is one of the keys. I really, really think that so too. I really, really do. Oh my gosh. Okay. Before I start completely crying out of everything, because I feel my feelings today and in general. Tell the listeners where they can find you if they want to work with you, if they have more questions, if they want to get to know you better. Mm-hmm. Where can they find you?
Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for me out in these internet streets, there are two places that are really good to find me. So the first is my website, which is www.tianadodson.com. So TIANADODSON.com. And if you're a social media person and you want to see pretty pictures that I put up, then you can check me out on Instagram. I am Tiana Dodson. Very, very unique and interesting. At I am Tiana Dodson on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook, but to be perfectly honest, I spend a lot more time on Instagram. So if you have any questions or you want to reach out, process through some things, you can DM me on Instagram. I'm available for that. Or you could also email me through my website. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Tiana.
Thanks for having me.
You may have noticed I am large. I can't hide it. It's no secret. It's a fact. I'm technically obese. I'm wobbly, jiggly, and round. In a word, quite frankly, I'm fat. won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's just some of why my fat body rocks. The war on obesity's a pile of shit. They just wanna sell you one more diet book. They spend $650 billion around the world. So we're at war against the way that people look. Some people wanna clutch their pearls and worry about us. They should be dieting. Dear God, what about their health? But there's no correlation between health and my appearance. So you can keep your damned opinions to yourself. I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's why my fat body rocks.